So it's been 3 weeks since the last Tux Radar podcast.
Indeed, a fortnight.
And we're all restless, pacing up and down the recording studio like caged tigers. Or at least I am anyway. full of enthusiasm and joy and life for Tux Radar Podcast Series 5, Episode 15. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And Graham Morrison is looking brown and...
I had a wonderful holiday. That's the reason why there was 3 weeks between podcasts. And yeah, I just went to France and it was sunny. It's good to be back.
Chateau. And...
There were chateau.
Men with funny hats and... Sitting by the door.
Yeah, and in fact there were. There were. you can't go to France and not see that.
Stripy t-shirt?
I didn't see one, but I didn't get out that much.
Strings of onion. That brings us to... in this episode, there'll be some news, some discoveries. There's a Speak Your Brain. There should have been two Speak Your Brains, shouldn't there, but one...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot to bring the Speak Your Brains down to the recording studio. So I've just found one on my phone. I think there was another one. In fact, it was in my trash folder, which is just another complexity when I originally saw it, because Future is so rubbish at filtering spam.
There's the challenge report. The challenge... We were challenged, weren't we, to get through this podcast without using
a certain word. Yeah, we were.
So,
in fact, it was a Speak Your Brain slash challenge.
Speak Your Brain.
Yeah. We could do that. Could be fun.
Let's do it.
Have we already used that certain word?
I don't think so.
Should we challenge the readers to work out what that certain
that's
word is?
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
That's impossible.
That is a very good idea.
If there's a certain absence.
Yeah, we've been challenged to not say a word.
Yeah, all right. Then.
A specific word.
To get through, yes.
Yeah, because obviously whoever said... I haven't got the email, so I can't say who it was. Sorry. This person said, can you get through a podcast without saying this word? Because maybe it annoys him.
Shouldn't be a problem. I mean, I've been speaking English for 30-odd years now.
It was Paul Hudson's fault. He always used to say it a lot, and it became infectious.
And challenge report. Joe just said that. Open ballot. And maybe, just maybe, some Creative Commons music, although that didn't seem to work terribly well last time. You can subscribe. Yes, this podcast is brought to you by the makers of Linux Format, which is a magazine about Linux. And if you like magazines and Linux, or if you just like tablets and looking at PDFs, you can subscribe to Linux Format at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. We are also available on Google Play, but that's not in all countries, and on Zinio and on the Nook thing. And also, if you're in rural Swaziland, if you have access to the... Oh, I really should have printed this out before I came down here. The Swaziland Computer Society. You can get in touch with Brian, I think was the chap who emailed me, and get hold of some copies of his latest DVD that he's putting together, which will include some copies of Linux Format and some of our tutorials. And then after that, if you like it, then you can spend money buying the magazine.
Is Swaziland big enough to have rural and metropolitan areas? Isn't it like half a mile across?
I don't know, how long did it take you to cycle across it?
I didn't go to Swaziland, I went the other way.
That's a good point. Rural Swaziland it might just be tautologous. Tautologous?
Yeah, I think it's just Swaziland.
Right, okay. I know there's a king there.
Yeah.
And he is very virile and manly.
Isn't he the most married man in the world?
Yes, what a stud muffin.
Excellent.
So in non-Swaziland related news, Grokklaw is dead.
No!
Boo. It's the latest casualty of the NSA, Prism, GCHQ, Frenchelon, bad things. Yeah, basically, PJ, the person who runs it, feels that she couldn't continue working under the constant veil of surveillance. So she discontinued it. And it's a massive loss, I think.
It is.
For not just for the free software world, but for the technology world in general.
When you look at all the stories, so many stories, particularly in certain national newspapers that are written by people who just don't have a clue what they're talking about, the contrast with Groklaw is immense. When, you know, PJ actually, Pamela Jones, she was a legally trained legal person and knew what she was talking about and did a really, really good job of explaining them so that lesser minds, such as mine, could understand what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also became a place for, like, the meeting of minds, the comments underneath.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It was just a real...
And it was so insightful.
Yeah.
You know, when they would run through the minutes of whatever the SCO case happened to be that day or what other things, you know, just the decoding
what had been said.
Yeah, yeah. It just made it all, you know, and also she was always bang on the money, you know, exactly. Even though it was a quagmire for all of the legal experts involved, she always seemed to hit on the points that were most important. He'd pull them out, you know, a 10,000-word document.
Look at this.
Yeah,
look
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah, and it was never hearsay or rumour. It was always exactly from source. She took the time to go through it line by line and not take other people's summaries or anything.
It's a terrible thing that she's had to close it down before this, and the wider impact on this kind of journalism as well, because I think the reason why she's doing it is because she doesn't want to put the people who give her the information, who will do that in the future, in jeopardy or to jeopardize their position or to be complicit in anybody getting into trouble over giving her tips. You know, and that's, you know, this is just the beginning of people learning to live with the consequences of realizing everything that they do is being monitored in some tiny, tiny way. But, you know, for people like, for Groklaw, it makes the difference between running and not running. And that's a worse thing for democracy and for right thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And it just shows the consequences of governments going after journalists as well.
Who benefits?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
You know, I don't understand.
SCO would have benefited.
Yeah.
But then if SCO had benefited, then everybody else would have non-benefited.
Yes.
Governments in helping rich and powerful shock.
Yeah. Should we move on to some happier?
Yeah, yeah.
Some
yeah.
happier legal news. New Zealand has banned software patents. They
that
are no
is
more.
Wonderful news.
That's,
yeah.
that's what happens when you have nothing to do apart from throw yourself off hills of very
well,
steepness.
There's been very intense lobbying from all the people that wanted to see this not happen. You know, it's just a great common sense move.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's what so many people in the technology industry want. And
it's what the hobbits wanted.
Yep.
Yeah. I've just finished reading Lord of the Rings. I'm pretty sure I remember the bit about software patents.
Do you understand Effie now?
A little bit.
Well, yeah, Effie's not here. He's on holiday. Yeah, he hasn't quit or anything.
He is also in France.
Yeah.
But he loves Britain so much, he's gone to Brittany. So he feels like he's still here.
Sorry. Yes, yeah. Good news.
Yeah. Well done, New Zealand.
Yes.
Does that mean, do you think, that it'll become the startup capital of the world?
It could well do, actually. I mean, it'll certainly give New Zealand tech companies a massive advantage. Yeah.
They're not too far away from, well, they're a million miles from everywhere, aren't they? But
yes.
it's a straight flight from the west coast of the US for anybody who wants to move from there.
They're not the best connected place in the world from our internet point of view.
No.
Several thousand miles of salty water cause problems there. But there's no reason you have to, a startup based in New Zealand couldn't host their data elsewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they do have all the beaches and mountains and pretty bays and wineries and all of that lot.
It's true, but if Saruman rises again.
If Saruman rises again, they've got Jerry Collins and Richie McCaw. They're safe.
Richie McCaw looks a lot like an orc.
If you're listening, Richie, handsome orc.
So before we annoy all our New Zealand listeners, we'll move on. The Edge, the Ubuntu Edge smartphone, didn't meet its crowdfunding.
Oh, so close.
So close. Only 2/3 of the way off. Well, slightly.
Only less. $20 million.
So. Yes.
Nobody's surprised.
No. But I'm sort of looking back. I was thinking about this morning. This may just have been a marketing masterstroke for two reasons. One is, nothing makes you want something more than being told you can't have it. Here's this awesome phone. Ooh, you can't have it. And this is, when the iPhone 5 was launched, there's whole rumours about Apple deliberately running out of stock, holding it back, so the shops ran out. So, it's sold out, you can't have it. Oh, no, I really want one, I can't have it. Obviously, I wasn't like that. But other people were. And the second one is now, because they pitched it such a high-level phone, this was to be the best phone. Now, everyone, mentally, it's linked. When you hear Ubuntu phone, you think,
awesome
top-end smartphone.
No!
So even if it comes down as like an average phone.
You're right. No! You fail.
You failed.
Oh. Took me a while to work out what was going on there.
we could just carry on. It's it.
That's what we do.
What's the penalty for failure?
In being interrupted and losing your flow. Sorry.
So now, yeah, in your mind, you associate the Ubuntu phone with like a Mamba Kabisa smartphone. I switched to Swahili then because I don't think there's an English word equivalent.
Awesome.
Now when they do launch it, even if it's only an average smartphone, it will still have that association in people's minds. Maybe
that's true. That, yes, I believe that you're right on both counts.
We might just be all puppets in Mark Shuttleworth's play.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right as well. And I just hope that Canonical can capitalize on this quickly, you know, because that's what it takes in the smartphone world.
Yeah, I mean, their projected first phone is for the first quarter next year. At least that's what it was before the...
Yes, that's what they said at the announcement, which is not too far away.
No, but it is after the Sailfish. It's after Christmas. Obviously, it's after Firefox, which is our next piece of news.
Mm.
But
it's exciting. I hope they do make some secret deal with someone to sell that phone to the 12 million people the people who pledged $12 million.
I mean, the amount of media coverage it's got is, and not only just for the phone, it's brought Ubuntu to the front of people's minds as well. I mean, I think just for Linux as a whole, that the success.
It's done great things for a Canonical and Ubuntu as well, you know, in people seeing how successful this has been and people talking about it in almost purely positive terms. You know, it's kind of, okay, so this is what Canonical wants to do. This is the direction they're going. And we can accept that a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it work and see that there's demand there as well.
And in people who hadn't heard of Linux before, Linux is now linked in their minds with Ubuntu and with Canonical.
Yeah.
So they might have no interest in buying a whiz-bang smartphone, but maybe they're a bit fed up with Windows 8. Oh, what's this? Oh, I might give that a go.
Yeah. More phone, Linux phone related news. The Firefox phone has been launched, sort of, in the UK and the USA through eBay. Bizarrely enough.
Oh, right.
ZTE.
How much is it?
It was £60. Well, it was £60. They've sold out, predictably enough. It's not. Wasn't clear when I looked whether or not they were going to launch another batch.
That's such a great price. I haven't tried it. because I'd love to be able to comment on what it's actually like.
Yeah, Linux format contributor Les Pounder has one.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So Good old Les.
We will have the lowdown on it, but he's only just got it, so we haven't heard from him yet.
So will that go in this issue that we're working on next now?
Yes.
Excellent. They had them in Spain for a while, didn't they? Or rather, as in the handful of people who managed to get hold of an early release one.
Yeah, it was launched as a sort of developer edition, the Geek's Phone. This is, in principle, targeted at a consumer audience, though I suspect it is mostly devs who have bought the first lot. I've used the simulator, and it does look... I mean, it's a completely different take on it, but it looks like a working, decent smartphone. And I like the idea of building everything out of HTML5 and CSS. And then, because that way, that makes it completely cross-platform then.
Yeah, standards equals good.
Yeah, I mean, the guys at Ubuntu, the guys at Canonical, and the guys at Selfish are all planning on using the same standard for HTML5 and CSS.
And HTML5 is becoming that kind of platform for the web anyway.
Yeah.
Which is all the smartphones are.
Yeah, and what's really good is it's being driven by Mozilla, this open, friendly organisation, not by a Google, not by an Apple, and everyone else having to play catch-up. It's being done in the open.
Yeah, yeah.
Where am I going? Yeah, the next bit of Linux is the XFAT file system has been open-sourced, officially this time. It was leaked, and someone took the leaked code, stripped out all the copyright tags, and put it on GitHub, and then apparently claimed Samsung owed them some money for doing them this favour. Samsung didn't take too kindly to this, told them to take it down, but before they did, someone actually saw that there was a GPL violation in the code.
Ah, right. I saw Samsung's response, and it was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so now the whole driver's been open sourced, GPL'd.
And that was going to be their intention anyway, was it? Or was it because of this?
Well, it's hard to say, to be honest.
So is this connected to whoever stripped the copyright notices out and put them on GitHub?
Yeah, because someone then saw that there was a GPL violation in the code.
But is that why whoever put it on GitHub did it?
You'd have to ask them. It didn't seem like that at the start.
Is it encumbered by any software patents?
That I'm not sure of. Not in New Zealand.
No.
Let's go to New Zealand. Let's start our own Linux magazine in New Zealand.
Yes.
Still, it's good.
Yeah.
It's a very useful bit of code.
And the final thing is Hand of Thief. Some malware for Linux has been released on the malware black market by some evil Russians. As opposed to the good Russians who are looking after Edward Snowden.
Yeah, this is not a...
We think they're looking after him.
Yeah.
This is not a rural, urban Swaziland dichotomy. This is There are actually bad Russians and good Russians.
Yes. I imagine the majority of Russians are fairly neutral Russians.
Yeah.
Some good Russians, some bad Russians. I mean, it's not a virus in the sort of Windows virus, Android virus things that you've sort of seen going around. I've sort of been having a look through it. It looks like a spear phishing tool to me. That is, if you specifically target, I would imagine this is people trying to steal industrial secrets from companies where Linux is the main tool, main operating system. Obviously, Google springs to mind there. It does pretty much what any other Trojan would do. It can intercept web traffic, it can capture all that sort of stuff. To be honest, all stuff any vaguely competent Linux hacker could have done with a few shell scripts. It's got no method of spread. It has to be spread manually. It has to be installed via sudo. It's not a big deal, but some people are trying to make it a big deal. That's the news.
Excellent news. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Discoveries. I'm pretty bad because I got back from holiday, came into the office, we had a deadline, things have been hectic, and I realised that the only thing that I discovered is that it's really in honour of Effie, because Effie's not here, it's something on Android, which is the panoramic photograph mode that's in the latest version of Android, at least on, I think, Nexus 4 and Nexus 7 and Nexus 10 devices. It allows you to take photographs of your, you know, like a 360-degree panorama, which most phones do now, and there's an app on the iPhone that does the same thing. But the clever thing that I didn't realize, and which I find really immersive, is that you can view this from the tablet or phone using the tablet or phone sensors, so that when you move it around in front of you, you see on the screen what you'd see if the screen was looking at the thing that you're taking the photograph of. It's a bit like having like a virtual reality headset strapped to your head, and when you move your head around, you see what you took a photograph of. And the responsiveness, at least on the Nexus 10, is incredible. And it's what is... I took a place of a photo of where we stayed last week, and I find it really takes me back there, much more so than an ordinary photograph. And it's a very, very cool feature.
Just thought, can you link it into like Google Tracks? Did you see that?
I don't know. No, I didn't see that.
They've basically done Street View on top of some mountains, right, and stuff, so you can get up to Everest Base Camp. Oh,
They're mapping canals like that as well, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah. Well, Ben did say when I showed him it in action that, does it do it on Street View? I haven't checked, but if it did, you know, you really feel like you're there. If you've not tried it, if you've got one of these devices, well, I, you know, maybe I'm easily fooled and getting old. You know, I like the Oculus Rift. This sounds great. So that is a genuine discovery, but not massively geeky. Anyone else?
Shall I go? Mine's more geeky. I've been involved in a project that is at the moment shrouded in secrecy, but hopefully we'll be able to announce it tomorrow or Monday, I'm told. But as a result of this, I've been playing a lot with Python more than I used to. Python's awesome. It's so easy. I can't get... Python and Pygame particularly is one thing I've been using together. You can knock out a game in the morning. I knocked out a game of Tron in the morning. I knocked out a platformer in a day. You can just bang, and it just such clean code. So you can it makes sense. It fits in the right way. Whereas some gaming libraries I've used in the past, you always sort of, your code feels mangled to fit in with the way the library works. For this, it's not. It's just clean. It's elegant. It's simple. It works like it should. It's epic.
You've really taken me back to Paul Hudson sitting just there, and I think saying exactly the opposite.
I hate Python. Python is awful.
But for many, many months. Yeah.
Looking at the PHP code he's put on Tux Radar, I take no value in what he says about elegant code.
You can say that now. Cool. I should spend... I like Python. I've not got into it in any great detail. You know, we had a games challenge a couple of years ago, and I find it very quick to get things done.
I can understand, to be honest, if he's coming from a different language, because of the idioms in Python, there are some weird-looking loops, and you have to get into the Python mindset of how to use things like dictionaries, which you don't generally have, and things that you have to get used to that, which, if you're just expecting it to be a different syntax for C... which a lot of languages really are, with a couple of libraries thrown in, it's not going to be that.
It's nice that it gets rid of all of the cruftiness that in dealing with APIs and all that kind of stuff. It just seems wrong that it's so easy sometimes to just import all that functionality.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time I was a Java coder, and I just can't stand Java now. It is so horrible to get stuff working.
It seems that there was the news that was at the Usenix conference where those guys had reverse engineered the Dropbox protocol by decoding the obfuscated Python code. And I suppose it's the same with any language. It's not a particular weakness with Python when you put anything under that kind of microscope. But then I've seen this a couple of times because my VPS front end was hacked. The VPS front end that my provider used was hacked. And that also was, I don't know whether it was the same obfuscation that they'd been using, but it was also obfuscated Python code. And there seems to be some kind of reliance on obfuscation security when maybe Python hasn't properly tackled that.
I believe it's actually the other way around. Python was one of the best to obfuscate, which is why these things have just sort of...
Right, okay. Oh, that's interesting.
Because I believe the way it worked is you because there's a Python bytecode, which isn't the way it's generally used, but you can do it that way. And basically, you just write your own Python bytecode and your bytecode interpreter. And once you've done that, it becomes incredibly hard to decompile it.
Right, okay, okay.
Whereas if you use something like C, decompiling's generally fairly trivial.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. I'll have to look into how they actually did it. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, and that's why this has hit the news.
Okay.
Because it was harder than previously thought.
I was going to say a word then, but I'll just move on. Any discoveries?
Yeah, I've got a couple, I suppose. My first discovery of the day is that my dentist appointment is actually tomorrow, not today.
Mine was today. I've got a filling falling out, and she tried to fix it, but it's just too bad. We've got to go back next week.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'll solder it back in if you want.
Another discovery is that... Yes, this is my main discovery, really. It's that the VirtualBox manual is over 150,000 words long. So an error message saying, check the manual, or somebody on a forum post saying, read the manual, is wasting everybody's time. It's just silly.
That sounds big, but that's smaller than your average printed manual, I would imagine.
Yeah, but, like, come on. Check this vast... 150,000 words.
It's true. Yeah.
Not even looking this section of the manual, or Google, or, you know, grep this search term in the manual.
Yeah.
Look at chapter one of the manual. I don't know.
Yeah.
And when I actually found out what I was looking for, the command to fix the thing was, it was actually shorter. It was just a one line command. It was shorter than the phrase, check the manual for help.
Yeah.
Error messages, sometimes they're useful, sometimes they're not useful. Even those error messages that don't seem to mean anything, you can, if it's just gibberish, you can put it into Google and get something meaningful out of it.
It's annoyed me ever since Google stopped using double quotes as literal quotes. You can't just cut and paste something, put it in double quotes, and it'll search for exactly that. Now it tries to work out what it thinks you're meaning. No, just search for the
Is there
string.
An equivalent to that?
Because not as far as I'm aware. Maybe in some of the search engines.
I used to use it all the time, especially for code, you know, if I was fixing bits of broken code.
What does this do?
Yeah.
I'll go with it.
And if you're doing something with a flag in there and you want to search for that, it's a minus.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, Google. I want to search for a literal string. Ah. So, Sergey Brin, if you're listening, sort it out.
Yeah. Take your glasses off. Do some work.
That brings us quite neatly to our halfway reminder. And we are more or less halfway through now, aren't we? Which is nice. We've paced it well.
We were all feeling subdued. I thought, you know, that first half would only last 5-10 minutes.
I think we've got more into it.
Yeah.
As the word that we can't mention seeps back into our souls. So still to come, there's the halfway... No, this is the halfway reminder. Still to come, there's a Speak Your Brain. A challenge report, which we've rendered rather redundant now.
Well, it's very easy. We failed.
Oh, yes,
yeah, that's true.
And the open ballot.
Okay, speak your brain.
Speak your brains. Speak your brains o'clock.
So I'm sorry I messed up on this again, but I've got this one from Mark Jeffrey. He says, "Hello, podcasts are really cool and I enjoy listening to them." Thanks, Mark. "I work for a bank in South Africa, and we are busy with a migration to open source and CentOS Linux from AIX, obviously not the mainframe. We have replaced our call center telephony platform, Avaya, around 900 users, with an Asterisk PBX cluster, which runs on CentOS boxes. What is the team's take on CentOS versus RHEL? There is a constant debate, mainly from our security department, regarding the security and patch availability. Also, Asterisk and or its derivatives, TriBox, FreePBX, would make a good article tutorial. Very simple to set up, including IVRs and some back-end integration." Hmm. Didn't you do a tutorial on Asterisk for us when you started?
No.
We've certainly done them. And obviously...
That was John.
Oh, was it?
That was even longer ago in the mists of time.
Yeah. I played around with Asterisk a few years ago, and it was complicated to set up back then. I don't know if it's got any easier. And while I don't have any opinions that maybe apply to 900 users when CentOS RHEL comes to mind. I think CentOS is a wider way of making RHEL more widely available, and as an execution of open source is a fantastic project.
Yeah, I mean, about the patch availability, that was, I mean, it did become a problem.
Wasn't it forked? I mean, wasn't CentOS, well, somebody duplicated the CentOS project with the aim of making the patches available sooner?
Well, Scientific Linux is obviously the one people often look at in that realm. But in the last sort of 6 months or so, CentOS has got a lot better. And that's probably one of the things we should point out is when, with CentOS, they actually manually check every line of the patch. They don't just, Red Hat is publishing the patch, let's throw it in. So you do get some additional security with that. Obviously, in banking, you've got much bigger security implications.
And a lot more money to spend, you'd think. You just go for RHEL.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. In a bank, it seems like a false economy.
Yeah.
Even if it is just a day or two each time.
Yes, yeah, because the only reason to do it is to save money. And there aren't any other reasons unless what you're talking about actually has caught some problems with RHEL security updates.
No, not that I'm aware of.
You're just adding some latency.
Yeah, and having that support if anything does go wrong. Obviously, a day's downtime for a website is annoying. A day's downtime for a bank's website is...
Or the PBX, if that's all it runs. You know, if people can't do their job because they can't call up.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good question. And it's great to know that open source is being used in banking.
Yeah.
And if anyone else has any questions, send them to graham.morrison@futurenet.com and we'll try and read them out next time.
So it's time for the challenge report.
Excellent. I think you and I are doing quite well. Andrew?
I have also failed. I failed exactly the same time as Ben.
That's terrible. Because I didn't even notice. My brain has become... Those neurons have become so worn to the word that they don't even fire.
All the more reason for performing the challenge then, because it's just noise now. Just white noise. The challenge sent to us by Rob Plenderleith. Hi, Graham. I have a challenge for you guys, doing a whole podcast without anyone using the word awesome. Good luck.
Yeah, he was right with his smiley at the end there.
So, thanks, Rob.
Great challenge.
That's a really good challenge.
Point well made. Yes.
What was that Swahili word?
It's two. Bomba kabisa.
Bomba kabisa.
Bomba. I believe it just comes from like the American phrase "da bomb," and "kabisa" is just a superlative.
Oh right, like go that so or something.
Yeah.
Bomba kabisa, kabisa,
kabisa.
Bomb Ali Bomaye.
Cool. That was good. I enjoyed doing that. That was a challenge we could try.
Yes.
Yeah.
A challenge. Yes. A challenge. Challenges. Challenges are now in the past. Because it's time for the open ballots. Ben wrote a question, which again I've neglected to copy and paste, but I think it was something along the lines of Linus released his Linux operating kernel system thing 22 years ago with the words hi, just working on a new project, won't be anything big and professional like GNU, and that was 22 years ago. And now here we are in the future, and we were asking, what do you think is going to come in the next 22 years? Obviously, we don't know, but it's just an exercise in fun Maggie Philbin-style speculation. Will our jetpacks and our flying cars run Android, and will be controlled by Sergey Brin? Or Blue Systems, which will no doubt have bought Google by then. we'll be running Windows 8 Service Pack 22. You decide. In the words of the Big Brother announcer, you decide. That was rubbish. So yeah, let's crack on with the comments. Anonymous Penguin with headphones says the company who this ad is from will have gone bust. And then later on says, no, I thought the third post got the ad. So did we.
Yeah. It did. It changed. Yeah. They changed the code probably in between those posts.
Yeah.
Oh, that was that fella that came over. The quite small, twitchy fellow. Looked a bit like a bird.
He wanted access to our CVN that manages all of our domains.
So he wanted access to all of our code?
Yeah, so that they could change the ad code. Because as he said to us, past Thursday, we won't be making any money. And it's like, oh, shock horror.
Kill
horror.
Kill Damage.
Oh, no.
Because it's so expensive to run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This free website's not making any money.
So, Terry71 says, it might be that there is just the one operating system. It became the standard and is used on just about every smart device except Nokia. The NSA and all the spy types are illegal and sit in their bunkers trying to get someone to update their computers, but no one can figure out the ridiculous code base for Windows/Mac OS 13 1/4. Or all technology is deemed as witchcraft and we have to rub sticks to make fire. That would be awesome. I, for one, welcome our new Raymir's overlord. The mobile desktop, Trevor, says, people will have mobile devices powerful enough to act as a desktop. That's a good idea. Trevor. Or should we say Mark? Simply hook it up to a monitor and keyboard. All data will be in the cloud, preventing loss when you get mugged. Microsoft will dump Windows, classing it as legacy, and pour its might and resources into a completely new OS. A clean start. The corporations will buy it, as they know the company. They can get drivers and everything. And everyone is writing stuff for it that works, as they can make money, and money makes the world go round, and thus Microsoft will roll on and regain its market share, and even the spy agencies will be happy, as they can get at your data directly from one place. That sounds like a good premise for a novel. I bet Cory Doctorow is working on it right now. Brian Hunter says, if the people who create the future of computing have no idea and get it wrong, what chance do the rest of us have? I have no idea where free software will be in 22 years, but I'm looking forward to the ride. Who's the people who create the future of computing? Is that Ben, Franz, asking the question?
I assumed you meant Linus.
Oh, right. Linus. Yeah. Easy. Easy mistake at a mic.
Should ask Linus. Where are you going to be in 22 years' time? He'll be diving. He'll actually have an underwater base.
He'll be chilling out. Being really cool and not offering us a drink. Phelan Whiteley says, I doubt there will be any real proprietary software left. But no one will notice, as free software will be so pervasive. Now, there's a counter claim to this, which I'm going to read out afterwards, and then we can discuss them both.
Okay.
No one will notice, as free software will be so pervasive. It already is, but it's only bound to increase. Anyone coming out of school or uni now already knows about it, knows about the Pi. The more the Raspberry Pi, the more they are using free software in Arduinos, etc., the less likely they are going to use proprietary software in employment. I think it'll have almost infinite appearances, from general purpose desktops to specialist interfaces, and I'll be there swooping in to consult for stupid money to clean up 2038 problems. I might have gotten my first LXF magazine from my subscription by then, maybe. Sad face. Sorry, Phelan.
Ask for your money back.
Yes. Actually, that is probably the best way, isn't it? If you ask for your money back, that's the only language they understand.
I always have that when you're in a restaurant and they're saying, taking ages to bring the bill. If you just get up and start to walk out, they're pretty quick about it.
So the counterpoint to that is Dizzy Lizzy, who says, 22 years, are you serious? In that amount of time, who knows what will happen? Do you have any clue how quickly technology changes compared to other things? If you asked me about 10 years down the line, I'd say the software situation is going to be a lot worse. But 22, freedom will win out and be the dominant option, mainly because it's free. I think things are going to get worse before they get better, but they will get better. And don't try the whole, but free software is getting so much more popular these days argument. Proprietary software is more popular than ever too. I think software in general is more popular and accessible than ever, and we're reaping some great benefits of all the work that's been put into free
stuff.
stuff. Free last line deleted.
So yeah, there's a lot of proprietary software. And I don't know if it's ironic or not. I'd have to ask whoever controls that word. But a lot of proprietary software is based on free software or BSD licensed software. No, especially when it comes down to Apple.
People like Google are using free software to create proprietary services.
And, you know, Google offering a whole cloud platform on Ubuntu servers and, you know, where does that get fed back? It's a totally different kind of system.
I think people really, the world's whole, really fail to understand just how pervasive open source software is right now. I mean, if you consider the majority, a large portion of people's compute use is now on the web. And the chances are, if you're looking at a website, you're looking at data that's held on an open source operating system being served by an open source browser using an open source language over an open protocol that's displayed to the user on an open source browser and that's being displayed using an open source graphical JavaScript toolkit. If they're doing it on their Android phone, which a lot of people are, that's a huge proportion of web use now, that's on a pseudo open source operating system. The fact that now Windows and Office is a tiny, tiny proportion of computer use. It's now open source is almost the standard for software. And it's, even though the sort of the front face of a lot of computers is proprietary, that if you actually talk about the actual processing time on computers, I mean, open source software across the board massively dominates.
Does that mean we can all go home?
Yeah.
I think, the way that you said that as well, I could just see you on stage in front of like 10,000 people and everyone, yeah!
So much has changed in the last, 10 years behind the scenes. It's now, it's a thin veneer of proprietary software on this massive open source software world. It really is like that. And it's all that the proprietary software companies can do just to try and stem that flow for a few more years. It's not going to last much longer.
Why don't they simply embrace it? I mean, it's been shown that it's not the cancer that they fear it to be.
Embrace it now while you are still the standard.
Yeah. It's that
and clean up on training and stuff.
Is it Kuhn's theory of scientific revolution that old theories don't die out, but the people who hold them do?
No, that's really good.
The new generation is built on open source software.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it be? You get people thinking, why can't I just use this code?
Yeah, and you just simply can't build a product anymore. It's uneconomical to build a proprietary software now.
Yeah.
Certainly once the first time you've tried Abbey Word or LibreOffice, the concept of ever paying for Microsoft Office ever again is just a complete non-starter.
Yeah.
And the more people... Oh, I don't know. Whatever I was about to say, they won't be anywhere near as clever as what you just said, so we'll just delete that, shall we? Yeah. That's actually the end of the open ballot comments, because I think I didn't... I left one on the printer. Oh, no, hang on, here we go. Also, Paranoid Penguin says Linux will be everywhere, but practically no one will know nor care about it. Ooh. Every Linux device will be sending past personal data to the NSA by default, even when set to flight mode. Also, the capture to this message says Talmudic Sirwine. What is a Sirwine, please? Don't know. John Connor, not verified, says, Dr. Miles Dyson will invent the neural net processor that runs open source software, causing Microsoft and Apple to invent a time machine to send Arnold Schwarzenegger back to 1991 to assassinate Linus Torvalds.
It is a risk.
Yeah.
But not in our reality.
What if it's actually Dr. James Dyson who invents a neural net processor that sends a vacuum cleaner back
to clean up.
That's probably less dangerous.
That would be good. But he won't be doing that in Bath. Thanks, Bath Council. That's pretty much it, to be honest. Sorry about that.
No, it's good. Good comments, and it's nearly lunchtime. So yeah. We can wrap it up. Go and get a bite to eat.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Please tune in next fortnight when Effie will be back. Yes, there'll be more news and frolicsome japes and discussion of hot topics. Speaking brains.
Yes, let's go.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Bye. It's such a nice day.